This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Linda Siegel. She is our legislative correspondent every year during the legislative session here in New Mexico. And today is our legislative preview. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, good morning, Mary Charlotte. Thank you.
It's great to have you. Now, Linda is a longtime follower of the legislature. She's also a lobbyist. And as many of our listeners know, there are 30-day sessions and 60-day sessions. This year, it's a 30-day session. What does that mean? That happens in, I guess, even years, 2016. What's the difference between those two kinds?
Well, of course, the legislature, the whole concept of the legislature was created in 1912 when we first became a state. And at that point, we had 30-day sessions or less every year. But in the 60s, it was decided that we needed more time. So 60-day sessions were created in the odd number of years, and 30-day sessions were created in the even number of years. And so in the 30-day session, it's just about doing the budget.
Supposedly,
it's about doing the budget. We have to have a budget by July 1 every year so that state government can function. And it's interesting what's happened over the last years with governors, because 30-day session is for budget, but it can also be for any topic that the governor wants to put on his or her call. And over, I'd say the last 30 years, when Gary Johnson was governor, he was governor for 8 years, and the 30-day sessions were just about the budget. There were no bills on his call.
He was a real minimalist.
Yes, he was. And then he vetoed, in the 60-day sessions, 70 or 80% of all the bills that he did receive. And then Richardson came in, and he was a very aggressive governor. And so every 30-day session, we had many, many bills that had nothing to do with the budget that he decided were very important. And Governor Martinez has been sort of carrying on with that, of putting lots of issues on the 30-day session. So it makes for a very interesting session, because when all you're doing is the budget during a legislative session, the only committees that are working are the finance and the appropriations committees. And the rest of the legislators are kind of sitting around waiting for the budget to come. But now, in these 30-day sessions, there's lots of committee hearings and everybody gets to do some work.
In Washington, if the president vetoes a bill, the Congress can override it with a two-thirds majority.
Yes.
Do we have anything like that in the state?
Yes, we do. But there have been very few vetoes in the last 25 years or so, because there's a real reluctance to do that. And
Governor Martinez has vetoed a number of things.
She has vetoed a number of things, but there's never been the willingness, even when the Democrats controlled both houses, to try to override her vetoes.
Well, how can they override it? Because she vetoes things, or whoever, the governor would veto something after the session is over.
Well, you can try to override a veto during the session if the governor vetoes it during the session. But you can also try to override a veto the next session. Usually by then the issue is moot, or you got to go on and start a different strategy to pass that bill. But you do have that opportunity when the next session starts.
So that's not a real option for most things. I mean, there were a lot of people upset about the fact that there was a hemp research bill that passed, and it went to the governor's desk and was vetoed.
Yes.
And if two-thirds of the legislators wanted to override that, what would they have to do it this session?
They could try to do it this session. Yeah. They could bring it back up. But they certainly don't have the votes in the House, because the Republicans control the House, although there were some Republicans that supported that bill.
So you used a term a moment ago, which was the governor can put it on her call. What does that mean? What is a call?
A call, C-A-L-L, is the message that the governor can put any topic on a list and say, I want you to discuss this bill or issues around this bill in the 30-day session. So with the bills that she's interested in hearing, she will send down to the legislature a message, a written message saying, I want this bill heard.
So what bills are on the governor's call right now?
Well, we know that she, and we have the driver's license bill on. Well, maybe we don't have to, but we have a reprieve till 2018.
Let's give a little background on that. The New Mexico driver's license right now does not, as many other states in the union, we're hardly the only one. There are several dozen others.
I think, yeah.
Do not conform to the so-called Real ID law.
Right.
And pretty soon everybody's going to have to do that, including New Mexico. Now, we were just granted an extension.
Right, till the 2018. January, I think, of 2018.
And so at that point, we'll have to come into compliance. But meanwhile, the controversy has to do with immigrant driver's licenses.
Right, with undocumented immigrant driver's licenses. So there was a bill that a Republican and Democratic senator sponsored together last year in the 60-day session that would have created a real ID compliant license and then another license that undocumented and other people could have. And that bill passed the Senate with only 3 votes against, and then it never got heard in the House because the House passed the version that the governor wanted, which was essentially to repeal any undocumented immigrant licenses. So we know this session that's going to come up, and there's already 2 bills introduced in the pre-filing, which we can talk about what that is in a minute. And one of them is the Republican bill, which creates a system much like Utah, where undocumented people can get, of a certain type of undocumented person, can get a driving certificate. And then there's the Real ID compliant.
Now, that's a step down from what undocumented immigrants
totally
have now, which is a real driver's
license. A real driver's license, right. And then another bill, and I'm assuming that the Senate is going to introduce their bill again. Another bill creates the Real ID compliant for people who want it, and then a driver's license, much like the one we have, for people who don't. And that could include undocumented.
And so where does the governor stand on this? She wants the repeal or the driving cards?
Well, it's real. I couldn't tell you right now. I think it'll much depend on what the legislature can pass and put on her desk and see if she signs it. But there's the problem with if the House won't pass anything but the driving certificate and the Senate won't pass anything but the option of the 2-tiered option, then we'll see what happens.
Well, and in that case, the whole thing gets punted to next year.
But we have the reprieve, at least for getting on airplanes until January of 2018. And there are, I think it is 25 other states that still haven't complied with the Real ID. And there are states who have actually passed laws saying we will never pass the Real ID.
And what's the motivation behind that?
You know, it's really a philosophical issue about the federal government telling states what to do, that states have always had the power to issue their own driver's licenses. And suddenly the feds are saying you have to have one just like this.
Okay.
And in many states, it's the Republicans who actually oppose Real ID.
Right.
Very interesting.
Yes.
A little glimpse into where New Mexico stands in national politics.
Yes.
It's sort of confusing. We're talking to Linda Siegel, our legislative correspondent. So, all right. So, driver's licenses.
Other things on the call.
What else is on the call?
Well, third grade reading retention again. Okay. That's a bill that would hold a third grader back who cannot read. And there has been obviously a lot of opposition to this because it has yet to pass and has been, I believe, in every session since the governor took office. And the pushback is, I mean, we all want third graders to read. It'd be nice if second graders could read, but we all want people to be able to read.
Ladies and gentlemen, first graders.
Yeah, yeah.
We learned to read in the first grade.
Right.
You learned to read in the first grade. I'm going to just go ahead and guess that everybody listening to this show learned to read in the first grade.
I would imagine. So it's not that we don't want it. It's that what the school districts argue is that they really want to have the option of determining that child's situation to see whether they should really be held back, what kind of resources can they bring to help them read, and not have a law that says no matter what, you have to hold someone back in the third grade, because there may be very good reasons that you don't need to do that. And we also need to put those resources in at the early grades to make sure there's no reason to hold people back in the third grade. So it's still a controversy, and I bet it will be one this session.
Right. Okay. Now, there is the so-called right to work, which is basically, as I read it, an anti-union bill that the governor also is introducing.
Yes, yes. And that failed in the last session also in the Senate, and that will be coming back. And really, that has to do with the right to work. So-called right to work means that if you don't want to join a union, you shouldn't have to pay a small portion of the union dues to have the union represent you and negotiate for salary increases and days off and vacations and PERA and ERB and all that.
Is this specifically about public workers, public sector workers?
No, it's about everyone. We are a state that allows unionization in any private business.
Okay. Now, is this a strictly partisan issue here in New Mexico?
It has been. In the past, there have been a few Republicans that have supported the situation that we have now. But generally, most Republicans want to see right to work, and most Democrats do not. Right to work.
The so-called right to work, because, I mean, this is one of thousands of examples of what's called framing.
Yes.
You frame an issue in your favor. I mean, you can call the same, this sort of like pro-life, anti-choice
right.
kinds of terminology. You can call it union busting. You can call it right to work. This will come up once again during this session, and we will see not only legislators, but union members themselves weighing in on this issue.
Absolutely. It'll be another controversial session where in the last session we had hearings that were 5 and 6 hours long because people were lined up outside the door to testify for and against, mostly against.
How does this work here in New Mexico? All the state legislatures are a little different in how they function, and one thing that we have here in New Mexico is a very open system where people have access to their legislators and they can testify. Like, what does it right. actually look like when you're, because you're there?
Yes. Well, when there are these controversial issues and people are really interested and engaged in them, a lot of people will come up to the legislature and sit in the hearings if they can get in. When we have these hot button issues like abortion, right to work, the third grade reading, the rooms are always in the largest, the hearings are always in the largest rooms, but most of those don't sit more than two. There's only two very large rooms, and they don't sit more than 100. So people line up in the hallways. When we've had gun control issues. Many people have come up and lined the hallways, and so you have the pro-background check people on one side, and you have the anti-background check people on the other side, and you have people with guns, you know, displaying their guns. And so citizens and others have a right to come up and testify at these hearings, but sometimes the committees will limit the number of people that can testify. They might say, okay, you can have 20 people on this side, 20 people on the other side. Or sometimes they just let everybody talk. And those are the hearings that go on for hours and hours.
Now, what kind of balance is built in, if any? So let's say there are 150 people waiting to testify in favor of some bill and four people waiting to testify in favor of the, you know, on the other
against
side,
the other,
against it. Can they say we're going to have four and four?
They can. This was very prevalent when we were doing the Human Rights Act to add sexual orientation and gender identity, and then the civil unions bill, where there were so many people on both sides. Usually there were more people for it, but the committee chair would go, okay, you know, we've really heard all these arguments for and against before, and we're going to give you 30 minutes on each side. And then whoever you got, when they take up that 30 minutes, if you want to have one person take up the 30 minutes, fine. But whenever that time is up, you're done.
And at that point, the people who are organizers, who are not part of the legislature, really kind of make those decisions and try to put their best people
right
forward.
Absolutely, yes.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And do you find in your long experience of observing the legislature that the people who testify, that arguments sway legislators, or are their minds pretty much already made up, or do the numbers sway legislators?
I think on these hot button issues, the controversies of our time, that people's minds are pretty made up. I have never seen someone change their vote because of testimony. Now, what I have seen, particularly in the gay and lesbian transgender issues, I have seen like people who were opposed to those rights, you know, hear some of the arguments and actually be moved by them, but not change their vote.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And yet, I mean, especially gay, lesbian, transgender has moved so far during my adult life.
Yeah.
From in government, in terms of the legal status and the social acceptance of people, that what's happening? I mean, the people who are against just get out of government and new people come in? Or do people actually change their minds over decades?
Well, I think what you see in some legislatures, even ours, that there are generational issues. So some of the younger Republicans have not been so anti-gay and lesbian.
It'll be so interesting to see what the Republican Party stands for 25 years from now.
I'll leave that to another guest.
To another generation of people, yeah. Okay, so we have talked about third grade retention and driver's licenses and right to work, so-called right to work. Now, you mentioned abortion. Is there an abortion bill?
Well, one of the legislators from the southern part of the state has announced that she was going to carry a bill to ban abortions after 20 weeks. And so we don't know if that's actually going to be on the governor's call. But this legislator has said she's going to introduce it.
So if that's the case, ladies and gentlemen, you will see all kinds of education about what actually is going on with later term abortions, but we will leave that for another program.
Yes, yes.
Now, crime bills.
Yes. The governor has said that because of the DWIs recently, because of the killings of especially the little girl in Albuquerque, the killing when she was in the car, she has will message, I haven't seen any of these messages, but she has said that she will put a number of these crime bills on the call, like a stronger three strikes you're out bill, I guess putting more crimes in there and maybe mandatory three strikes you're out. There's a bill which I don't know if it'll be on the call. It's to make it a hate crime to injure a police officer or try to hurt a police officer. The curfew for under 18, you have to be in by a certain hour. Increased DWI penalties. Some bills related to child abuse, to pornography. I think all of those kinds of crime bills are going to be on the call. And they're mostly about creating more penalties and enhancing crimes so people spend more time in jail, in prison.
Right. And so that brings up really interesting questions about whether, for example, people engaging in the pornography trade would look at the bill and say, ooh, stiffer penalties, I'm going to go into a legitimate business.
Right, yes, yes. It's hard to know. I think there have been plenty of studies that people don't necessarily not commit crimes because they go, oh, I might get a 30-year jail sentence, prison sentence.
Yeah, and on the other hand, you are getting people off the street. So we will see in more detail what the content of those bills are and continue to talk.
Yes, definitely.
Now, another thing, and we talked about this in some detail with Fred Nathan from Think New Mexico, but capital outlay reform is also something that's on the governor's call, which I find interesting.
Yeah, I mean, since she came in, she has been interested in reforming our capital outlay system. And as we've talked about before, basically the way the capital outlay money is distributed is a third to the House, a third to the Senate, and a third to the governor. And that's moved around a little bit, particularly when Richardson was in. Sometimes he would try to take more of the amount, and maybe he would get half, and then the House and the Senate would have to split 25%. But it's not a planned system, as I'm sure you talked about with Fred. It's really about some of it, the major stuff for statewide, it can be prioritized. And I think that a lot of the statewide stuff is absolutely right on necessary. But then every legislator gets their little pot of money. And like in Santa Fe, our legislators are really good. They sort of spread it around. So each legislator depends on the year and how much money is available, but they'll give money to the public schools, to the Santa Fe Community College, to the city of Santa Fe, to the county of Santa Fe, and a water system somewhere that may or may be owned by the city or county. But they use them on pretty essential projects, but it's the projects that they want or their constituents want. And it's not necessarily something planned or strategized, though usually they only give money to those projects that have been prioritized by the entity that they're giving it to.
As we discussed in that earlier program, I think a lot of people don't even have any idea what, I mean, they don't connect their legislators with the projects that they're doing. I mean, the legislators do.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be illusory to think that people are voting for them because of the capital
right.
outlay money that they bring home. They're voting on issues and other things.
Yeah, it's a little different in the rural areas because in the rural areas, the people know you got money, legislator, for my water system or you helped build that senior center. But that's because there aren't as many people. In a community like Santa Fe or Albuquerque, nobody has a clue what their capital outlay went for.
We can call it pork, ladies and gentlemen. My favorite meat. We're talking to legislative correspondent Linda Siegel about the upcoming 30-day session, which starts on Tuesday, the 19th of January. And we've talked about the various bills that will be heard, but one thing that we haven't talked about, which is the basic purpose of the 30-day session, is the budget. The budget being something that is seemingly boring to the layman who might be listening to the radio, because, I mean, how different can one budget be from another budget? You have to keep funding state government. What is at issue with the budget? Why is it so important?
Well, obviously it's important because that's how we have health and social services and our corrections department and our state police and all of the agencies of government. And this year, it may not be that much of a battle because there's probably not going to be much new money. Both the governor and the legislature propose a budget, and both of those budgets have been released. They're essentially for the same amount, $6.5 billion. They divide it up a little differently. The legislature gives a little more money for Medicaid than the governor does. The legislature didn't give any money to the health department, and the governor did. And the legislature wants some across-the-board raises. I don't think that got into either budget. So the battle will be over whatever that money is, which we really don't know what the new money is. We're operating on about a $6.3 billion budget for this fiscal year. And in December, the legislature and the administration agreed that there was about $230 million new dollars. Well, since then, the price of oil has declined another approximately $10. And for every dollar, the state of New Mexico loses $10 million in revenue. So do we now have $100 million less? The legislature is actually meeting this week when the session doesn't start until the 19th, but the Appropriations Committee and the Finance Committee, the Senate and the House, they start meeting a week early in a 30-day session so they can go through each department's budget. And what they do is compare the governor's version of the budget to the legislature's version of the budget, and then they pick and choose which one they're going to put in the final House bill to, or they combine them. And we're going to see if there really is that new money, because there's great worry on the Finance and Appropriations Committees that the money will not materialize.
Right now, New Mexico's budget is utterly dependent on oil and gas, essentially on extractive industries. Is that correct?
It's largely dependent. I mean, what happened because of gasoline prices being so low, consumers, you and I, theoretically, are spending more money on other things that we were just spending on gasoline. And so the gross receipts tax for the state has gone up somewhat, but not in the numbers that would equal the loss that we're experiencing in oil and gas.
Yeah, because, I mean, if oil and gas is exported and the numbers go down, that's not necessarily offset by domestic spending of domestic means within New Mexico only.
Right, right. So that's going to be the hot issue around the budget. Is there any money, any new money, and then how do we parse it up? And
is there any planning going on for the inevitable eventuality that oil and gas are not the main revenue generators? I mean, at a certain point, either there's climate change legislation that keeps oil and gas in the ground, or we run out of it. One or the other is inevitable.
Mm-hmm. My answer is no.
Okay. There's no plan.
No, no.
All right.
No.
Meanwhile, moving right along, what about the environment? Every year there are, and we always talk to Conservation Voters New Mexico and other organizations that are concerned with keeping New Mexico's air, water, and land as healthy as possible. And there's been a lot of controversial bills introduced, both pro and anti-environment, under this administration and previous administrations. What are we looking at this session?
Well, in the pre-filed bills a few years ago, the legislature started allowing bills to be introduced and given a number before the session starts.
That's what pre-filing is.
That's what pre-filing means. And there have been, a couple of hundred bills, memorials, constitutional amendments already pre-filed. And in that list, I did not see any dealing with the environment or water issues or anything.
Okay.
So I don't, it's hard to know. The governor hasn't said anything about putting those kinds of bills on the call. So we'll just have to see if there's going to be anything there.
Now, we've talked about bills that have been pre-filed that are on the governor's call, but there are a lot more bills that have been pre-filed that are interesting and important.
Yes. One of those bills is a religious freedom bill, which is a very controversial bill. You may remember, wasn't it Indiana or something? This is the bill that says it's okay to discriminate against gays and lesbians based on your religious belief.
Right. And they tried to get some, like, not allow some people into a pizza parlor.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. But there was a big controversy in Indiana because the legislature passed a bill that did that, said you could discriminate based on your religious belief. And then there was a huge backlash. And I believe the governor vetoed that bill because of it. So it's a bill that's happening in many states. It's passed in some southern states. And it is a pure discrimination bill that you can deny me as a lesbian eating in your restaurant, buying a service from you, just because you have a religious belief.
Just as an aside, the Indiana controversy happened when a pizzeria in northern Indiana closed after its owner said that because of his religious beliefs, he would not be able to cater a gay wedding.
Ah, okay. That you checked that, yes. So we don't, do we really want that kind of law in New Mexico?
So
we'll
basically,
see. And we don't know if it will be on the call or not. It's a very popular conservative Republican bill that's been introduced in many states.
Has it passed in many states?
It's passed in a few.
Yeah. And that's another example of framing.
Yes.
Some people will call it religious freedom. Other people will call it discrimination.
Right. Yeah. So that's one that we'll see if it's going to be on the call. So there's a couple of interesting bills that are the result of hot issues around, like the superintendent in Albuquerque getting fired and getting paid, and the prior superintendent there. So there's a bill that limits the superintendents of public schools, their contract, to a couple of years and prevents any kind of payout if they get terminated early. That's going to be a tough one to pass. I doubt she's going to put it on the call. And there's also a similar one for college presidents and athletic directors. So there's a real concern among some legislators that our other public bodies, like schools and colleges, are not managing their money well and they're paying out all these people. Of course, there are many complicating factors around that. And how would you even hire someone if you're only going to give them a 2-year contract?
Yeah. Have they considered more thorough vetting of their superintendent candidates?
Well, it's a complicated issue, being a longtime board member of the Santa Fe Community College and having had to deal with some of those issues. And it's very complicated in hiring people and checking their references and making sure that it's going to be a fit. And
right. Okay, moving along.
Yes.
Now, there's a marijuana bill.
Yes, there's a legalization taxation bill for marijuana. I'm willing to bet that won't be on the call, but a legislator from Las Cruces has introduced that. And
it will surely be introduced next
yes,
year.
Yes, absolutely.
If it isn't
absolutely.
This year. And it's interesting to see what the numbers are. I mean, Colorado is bringing in an extra $60 to $80 million
yes.
of tax revenue, which is a lot of money. It's not enough to, for example, replace oil and gas
right.
revenues and things like that. But it's, I think it was $60 million in new revenue and $20 million in savings on law enforcement and
mm-hmm.
court costs for not arresting and prosecuting marijuana users.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So it's a hot issue across the country, and perhaps we'll be dealing with it in another session.
One thing that's come up before is an independent ethics commission.
Right. All the issues around the numerous elected officials in our state who have ended up violating the public trust and gone to jail or prison. There, another state ethics commission, independent ethics commission, will be introduced, another bill for that. Although it's been introduced a number of times in the past, maybe there'll be an impetus to pass it this time if it's on the call. We don't know if that's on the call. Also, all the issue around campaign finance reporting. There are a couple of bills that have been introduced already on changing the reporting requirements, making them clearer for both the lobbyists and the candidates, and also the a campaign finance reform about disclosure by the nonprofits that are funding a lot of political campaigns. So those bills will have been introduced, but we don't know if they'll be on the call.
Why is that one so important, the campaign finance?
The reporting requirement, the disclosure requirement. Well, we have all these entities that are spending, particularly in the country, not as much here in New Mexico, though we certainly have them, millions and millions of dollars for candidates. They're independent expenditures. They're not supposed to be collaborating with the candidates. But those donors are not disclosed. And who is funding this campaign and that campaign, the independent part of the campaign? And it's very important that at a minimum we know who's given the money.
It is public office, ladies and gentlemen. And when public offices are influenced by private interests, we should know about it, shouldn't
we? One would think.
One would think. Now, are there any, we're talking about hot button issues. Are there any non-hot button issues that should be hot button because they're important?
Well, none come to my mind except climate issues and water issues. I guess I do have some.
Yeah.
But, drought. Just because now we're not in a drought, one year we're not in a drought, we still have to keep addressing the problems of our lack of water in New Mexico. Unless there's some, I'm sure there are some capital outlay appropriations that will be addressing water, but we just, if now we're doing good, so we don't have to talk about it or think about it.
Well, that brings us back to issues of planning. People have, some people have 2-year terms, 4-year terms, 6-year terms, and it's hard for politicians to think beyond the length of their term, and really even beyond the length of the session. But there are some things like, as you say, climate and water, where it will be very important for our children and grandchildren to have things put in place now.
Right, right. That, that's part of the problem now with our governments, because, and that's not just our state, but everywhere, that we're just dealing with what's immediately in front of us instead of doing actual planning. And it's part of what's happening because of the partisan nature, of government, of democracy today, where we can't think beyond who's getting elected next. And people aren't in long enough to actually have an impact. Now, when Richardson came in as governor, he had big ideas, and he didn't really bring people along necessarily in a planned way, but he did accomplish some things that some of us liked, with some, talking to people and bringing them along or making them come along. But there is no, within the legislature, entity that plans for the next 20 years or 30 years. There's not even anything that plans beyond the next year.
Is there anybody out in regular society who's doing that that does influence the thinking of legislators?
Well, we have groups that have ideas and try to bring them to legislatures in New Mexico, into the legislature. In New Mexico, we have New Mexico First, which picks a topic every year, and then they bring people together and have collaboration and consensus and come out with a plan on something. And sometimes those plans go somewhere, sometimes they don't. It's kind of discouraging.
I think about this quite often because, I mean, animals in the wild don't plan for the future. I mean, beyond the day or the week. I mean, they fly south, they fly north, they're birds, whatever. I learned when I was 24 that you have to start planning for your retirement when you're in your 20s. And I started doing that. And
yes.
Not everybody does. And if you do, by the time you're 40, 50, 60, 70, you're in a lot better shape than if you don't. And I think we've kind of gotten this through our heads, or many of us as individuals, that we have to do this for our families.
Mm-hmm.
But
not for our
civic
even, life. Yeah.
Yeah, even for our cities, I think there's some planning. But for the state and for the nation, it becomes unwieldy and difficult.
Yeah, it's a sad situation. Now, in many of the departments in state government, the Department of Health, Corrections, they will do some long-range planning. But then when the next governor comes in and takes out all the top leadership and puts their own leadership in, then you could end up going in other directions. So it's not consistent. It's not well thought out.
We're talking to our legislative correspondent, Linda Siegel. Now, there are some terms that we just want to get out of the way now that people use and that you will use during the session. For example, what does it mean when a bill drops?
Yes, I use that frequently, and my clients go, "Drop a bill? What does that mean?" And that means you've introduced a bill. You've gotten it written, you found a sponsor, and that sponsor then introduces it on the floor. That's another one.
Dropping dropping it on the floor.
The floor. Yes, yes. So the bill gets introduced into the appropriate chamber, which we often call the floor, and then it can go to its committees and be heard.
Now, when it goes from the floor to the table, no, it doesn't work that way. There's a table. What does it mean to table a bill?
We have committees. When a bill is introduced, it gets assigned to a certain topical committee, so based on hopefully what the topic of the bill is. And so it goes to that committee and it has a hearing. And it can get a do pass out of that hearing or a do not pass, or it can be tabled. And if it's tabled, it means it just goes away. It just sits there in that committee and never gets reported out and dies. The bill is no longer viable and nothing happens to it. And there's this whole process of looking up bills on a bill locator on the website, and you will go to that bill and you'll see that it was introduced on this day, the second day of the session, and then it's went to this committee like the seventh day of the session. And then you never see it again. So what probably happened is that bill got tabled.
Now, do not pass is stronger than tabling, but they're functionally
the same.
The same.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, there's another word, which is blast.
Blast, yes.
The governor can blast a bill that's been tabled.
No, the legislature can blast
the legislature,
a bill.
Okay.
So say a bill gets tabled in a committee, and it's usually this happens with controversial, very controversial bills, usually social issue bills. And the chamber, the Senate, or the House can make a motion to bring that bill out of the committee, even though it's been killed, essentially tabled in the committee. They can bring that bill out of the committee and bring it to the floor, bring it to that chamber, and either put it on the agenda for a future date or debate it then. So it bypasses the committee process. And so we call it blasting a bill out of committee.
Now,
and we hate that.
Yeah. Well, it's always a very politicized thing, yes, and people get very upset. And
right.
A bill usually has to go through not just one committee, but multiple committees. And when it does that, then it goes to the floor. And then if it passes, it goes to the other chamber.
Right.
It's a miracle anything gets passed at all.
Yes, yes. A bill has to generally go through at least two committees. Sometimes if it's got money, it'll be an appropriations committee. And so it takes time to go through all those committees, and there's a time between one committee and the next committee, and there's a time before it goes to the floor and is heard by the whole chamber. So, yes, it does take a bill cannot just whiz through generally. Now, there are bills that are whizzed through based on leadership, but those are infrequent.
We have here in New Mexico a citizen legislature. What does that mean?
Well, I just heard that we are now the only state that does not pay our legislature one dime. We pay them a per diem. We pay the legislators a per diem for every day they're up here during the session, and they get per diem when they serve on interim committees, which meet June through December. But we don't pay them anything like a salary. And in fact, there is a constitutional amendment to pay legislators a salary. And that would have to pass both the House and the Senate and then go on the ballot in the next general election, which would be November of this year.
What are the pros and cons of that in your view?
Well, when you don't pay people to do all this work, and it is so much work to be a legislator. You have to, if you're a working person and not retired, mostly you're going to have to leave your job for 30 or 60 days on the different years. And if you're on interim committees, which most legislators are, you're working 3 or 4 days a month or more because you're probably on multiple committees. So it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. And to not pay for people, to not value that work, it is wrong, and I really do think we should pay our legislators.
Well, it does exclude a lot of people from running.
Absolutely.
And therefore, maybe your more working class people are not able to serve in this way.
That's absolutely right.
Very interesting. Now, we've got just a couple of minutes left. You are not only our legislative correspondent here on KSFR, but you are a lobbyist. What kinds of organizations do you lobby for?
Well, I represent a lot of healthcare providers like the Nurses Association and the nurse practitioners and the nurse midwives and the chiropractors and the OBs and psychologists, social workers. And then I have some nonprofit clients like the Domestic Violence Coalition, who's always, you know, trying to get more funding for their programs, and the school-based health clinics and the homeless programs, Homeless Coalition. So I have a mix. I also represent the Santa Fe Public Schools along with Virginia V. Hill. And so I have a good mix of clients, and it's very rewarding sometimes.
Well, we look forward to having you on the air. And Linda Siegel, you will be here every Friday morning from 8 o'clock, right after the 8 o'clock news on KSFR, until 8:30 on Fridays starting next week during the course of the 30-day legislative session. So we will see you at the baking company.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Linda, thanks for being with us. Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.